Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is August 14th, 2014. And first a note, many PhD level scientists, engineers, professionals from all walks of life. I talk to them weekly, just due to the interaction of the radio show. I don't talk to anyone at length or anything, but due to interaction of, say, buying products or whatever, I get to talk to these people. And there's a huge level of support of what I do on a very professional level. So this show has people that are everything from common laborers to grandmas and grandpas and little kids and families. This past week, somebody asked me, said, what kind of people listen to my show? And the answer is that it's everybody. There's not a single, it's not, say, geek scientist, armchair scientist sitting at home, Trekkies or anything like that. It is a broad, broad spectrum of people. So at any rate, that's you just have to understand, if you listen to this show regularly, you have a wide variety of compatriots who listen to this also. Also a quick mention, the 10% sale that was supposed to end last Sunday, a little event happened to me. I got bit by some bees, and it's nothing serious. I lived through it. I mean, it was, it's always an event. So I was actually going to make a little comment here about what to do if you're bitten by bees. First of all, run. You have to get away from them, and you have to outrun them. Sometimes that's you have to run quite a ways, might be 50 yards, but you have to move very quickly. If there's kids involved, sometimes they're confused. You got to get them out of there, and you have to, sometimes if you're running in a straight line, they will follow that straight line. So make a cut, like a 90 degree cut. And, excuse me, but you have to get away from those bees and then get to a protected area in a car, in a house or whatever until they subside and go away. Then you should have something called Afterbite. And there are some various similar products on the market, but this is the only one that I know of that will actually kill the venom in the sting. There are some that are kind of nice. They come in this little tube, and it's kind of hard to find. You might be able to find it online, but it's called Afterbite, B-I-T-E. So have that around, especially in the summertime. Now is bee season, along with fly season, so beware of bees. They can be in hay. They can be in trees, they can be under decks, they can be under an overhang in a building, and you might encounter them almost any place. But when they come out like 100 of them. So beware and be ready to run and get away from them. It also helps to wear heavier clothes so they can't get through. But like I say, if there's kids involved, get them out of there. Get them running. If you can get them on your back and run, you'll move much faster. Because bees can go very fast. Okay, enough of that. A little notice about the products. The 10% sale is still on. It'll end tonight at midnight, tonight Thursday. So that's the end of the 10% sale. So if you haven't gotten made use of that, you still have a couple hours to do that. Okay. Just remember also that if you make any water filter purchase product, you get the two books free, RSA, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, and my water book is simply called Water. These are ebook formats, so if you make any, doesn't matter what product, any product in the water filter line, you will get those two books in email, and you'll get those books free. If you make more than a $400 purchase, you will get the entire set of books free, all of my ebooks, not the print books. So it will not include, for example, Calculate Primes, which is only in print form. But you'll get all of the other books free if you make more than a $400 purchase. And that's not just water filter products, that's anything. Okay, NASA this week, a couple announcements, says that they have measured light bending around a black hole. And so it's kind of a, they see light coming from two directions. It's the same light. It has the same spectrum. And so they claim it's bending around a black hole. Well, no. They're seeing bending of light, and this is one of the common errors of modern astrophysics, because they have never, ever confirmed that light bends around gravitational objects. You can prove in a laboratory the special relativistic concept of the speed of light being the same in all frames of references. That is easily done in a laboratory. It's a little more difficult to get a very massive object into your laboratory. So they rely on the theoretical concept, and then they, through insinuation, they imply that the bending is due to a massive gravitational object. But what I've shown in my theoretical work has been shown in a laboratory, the induced electric dipole redshift, you can actually demonstrate in a laboratory. And I've done this in front of classes, in front of many people. But it's laboratory demonstrable in the laboratory, but it shows how it's the electric field, it's the non-uniform electric field around stellar objects that causes the bending and the redshifting of light, not the mass of gravitational. There are so many contradictions to the general relativistic concept of bending a light. In fact, Einstein himself denied it before he died. You can read that. It's in his book, Out of My Later Years by Albert Einstein. I think it's page 56. It's referenced at least in my books where I talk about that. Okay, we are having the coldest summer on record. I just want to keep repeating this because there's so much phony baloney out there about global warming or about global climate change. And I'm very happy to see that when the blogs hit after some of these ridiculous articles, that people challenge the global warming and they go right to the heart of it, that this is a political religion, it should be classified as a religion, it's for money, it's for the scientists who need to say that. Remember that Obama made it a national policy. And they don't say global warming because it's absurd. We are literally in the coldest summer on record. Now, I've heard people say in the last week, oh, but it's hot here. Well, no, compare it to what the normal hot temperature at this time of year should be. It should be 100 degrees in Ohio. It's 76. If you look at the high temperature profile for the world, it is much cooler. In fact, we're 10 to 20 degrees Fahrenheit cooler than normal. So we are in the coldest summer on record. Just a couple quick notes about hurricanes. Hurricane Julio is in Spanish, really, is bypassed Hawaii, is moving off, still as a hurricane status, moving off into the North Pacific. And there again, where is this storm getting its energy? It's getting it from the ionosphere. It's not from warm water, because it's certainly passed out of any warm water state. The other hurricane, of course, missed, or went over Hawaii, caused a little bit of wind damage. Nothing severe. That was Isel. That was last week. There's another tropical storm in the Pacific right now. But the Atlantic, zip, zero, and that's what I predicted, that the Atlantic hurricane season would be a dud this year. We're not seeing manipulated storms. We're not seeing much of anything. So we're midway through the hurricane season at mid-August. So as I predicted, a dud of a hurricane season in the Atlantic. I should follow up too. I said that we'll watch Isel, which was the hurricane that was going directly over the Big Island of Hawaii. It passed pretty far to the north, and it's unlike Daniel, which swung in from the south a number of years ago, and I said it shorted out to that new island that was being built off the southeast corner of Hawaii. And the electrical short, as when it did, all of that electrical power went down deep into the ground. It followed that electrical path down where that island is being formed, and it caused an earthquake about 5 kilometers down. But Iselle did not do that. Iselle, as a weakening hurricane, basically transitioning into a tropical storm as it crossed the Big Island of Hawaii, just kept going. It did not jump over, but it was pretty far away. It was probably about a good 100, 120 miles away from that growing island. Little different scenario. My Robin Williams story. Okay, this past week, one of our national treasures passed away, and I don't know the circumstances at all. I don't know if anybody really does. But at any rate, I have a story where I met Robin Williams, and so I wanted to talk about this on the air. I was in downtown Minneapolis. This was probably around 1999. I'm going to just make an estimate. And I rarely go to bars and pubs. In that place, I had never been in this little part. I think it's called McGregor's. It's in downtown Minneapolis. And I went in there to have a beer. So I'm leaning against the bar, and it's an Irish motif kind of bar. You would think you were in Ireland. And so this guy comes up, and he was a little distance away at the bar, comes up and he starts talking to me. And he's just talking and talking and talking and talking. And he's telling me about horses, and he just bought a ranch out in, I think it was Colorado or Wyoming. And he was very excited about horses. And I was telling him that I loved horses. I had ridden up in the mountains of Mexico and the big open areas, the great mountain plateaus of Mexico and other places where I had ridden horses. And we were conversing. And this guy just talked and talked, and every few minutes he'd just throw in something just hilarious. So we're talking back and forth, and he's rather short, a short little stout guy. And after a while, he looks at me and he says, "Do you know who I am?" And I said, "No, I don't." And he goes, "Ah, good." And he kept talking, and we talked for a long time, probably an hour, just going on and on and on. And I thought, I just stopped in here for a minute. I got to get going. But I said, really nice talking to you again. And so I said, I gave him my name, shook his hand. He says, "Yeah, the Robin Williams." And so that was my Robin Williams story. And I didn't really realize until afterwards who I'd been talking to. But just a bundle of energy and goodwill and just a very nice person. Anyway, that's my Robin Williams story, but a national treasure lost. I don't know why these things happen, but Hollywood is a tough place. I've been at Hollywood and in Hollywood and around Hollywood, and I know people from Hollywood. It's a tough place to be. It's got a lot of, it's the Crystal City, but also there's a lot of pain there. By the way, the main science topic tonight, I'll be continuing my discussion of distributed energy, an extremely important topic in today's world. Let me, in that vein, I just have such a long laundry list of topics tonight, I'll be jumping around here a bit. Life without a refrigerator. This is something I've been experimenting a little bit with myself, and in many foreign countries, refrigeration is not something that is widely used. You go down the street, the meat is hanging on meat hooks in the window of the store in the sun or in the store, and there's no refrigeration. The vegetables, the fruits, etc., are out in the open air. They're fresh. But here's the thing. If you change the temperature, hot, cold, of fruit and vegetables, in fact, the worst thing that you can do, if you go to the grocery store and the fruits are very cold, they're not going to last long. you can't take fruits and vegetables and put them in a very cold temperature and have them last long. And so there's that constant change, hot, cold, warm, cold, colder, that actually causes problems with fruit. And so, and vegetables, and actually meat. So the one of the issues, how can you live without a refrigerator? In fact, for a number of weeks now, I have turned my refrigerator off. It's not running. The fruit and the vegetables are sitting in open bins that are, the fruits are in plastic bags. Some of them, it depends on the fruit. Potatoes are kept in a paper bag in a wicker bin on the counter. Onions, beets, items like that are kept in that bin in paper bags to keep them separate. Then, and so they're not gaining humidity. That's the other thing that destroys food is humidity. So the vegetables are in a plastic bag. They're dry, but they're protected so the air cannot get to them. And they're lasting sometimes over a week. So it's just a technique that you might want to try out. But if your fruit and vegetables have already been super cooled, almost to freezing, like in the grocery stores, they want to do that so it looks nice and green when you buy it. But as soon as you get it home, it's going to go bad very quickly. Just something to think about. I'll be talking more about survival in a minute. There was a tremendous water spill in Canada. And I don't have the email in front of me. Let me quick pull that up. Okay, I now have the web page here. This comes from the RT.com news web page, referred by a listener. And millions of cubic meters of water, sand, and chemicals, which were released into the waterways of British Columbia, Canada, from a breached mine tailings pond, have led to total water ban for residents in the area of the incident. This is tailings from a mining company that's called the Mount Polly Copper and Gold Mine, and they were overfilling the reservoir. They had been put on notice by the government agencies that they were filling their tailing pond too full with water, and it breached. There are 300 families in this area. Listen to what's in the water. Lead, arsenic, zinc, mercury, and phosphorus that were in the Environmental Canada report. Whoa. The disaster here was incredible. But just once again, the irresponsibility of the mining companies. Another article about millions of gallons of oil being leaking from pipes that are going through North Dakota that are leaking into the water supply there. And once again, in Colorado, oil pipelines leaking into the scenic river areas of Colorado. At any rate, the environmental disasters going on, big business being allowed to just run rampant over the environment, absolutely incredibly horrible what's going on. And the real reality of this is that none of this is necessary. The fracking and the absolute disaster that are going on, what they're doing underground is going to damage the environment, the underground environment, which is just as important as the above ground environment. Here's a story that blows my mind. Now, you have to understand who the players are here. PayPal, we know who they are. That's the money transfer entity that was the first major moneymaker for Elon Musk. Just bought Battelle Research, which was a private think tank research institute which primarily depended on government funding for their research, and they did what I call tier one spook research. that's the best name I can use online or on the air. Tier 1 spook research. Now, let me give you some examples. Little things that can tap and basically by tap, I mean little devices that can go in areas to secure information from people, from companies, from individuals, from governments, etc. One project, for example, was to go down into the ocean, tap into the undersea cables so that they could be monitored. This is Battelle research. This is tier one spooky stuff. Okay, PayPal just bought them. Now, who is PayPal? If you look at who PayPal is and who owns PayPal, now there's associations with Google, with a lot of the investment firms, with a lot of the major international, the major national banks, which of course are divisions or subdivisions of the World Bank, if you look at the chain of command of banking. Why is PayPal buying Battelle Research Institute, which is a tier one level spook research institute? It doesn't get any stranger. Now, if you look at who owns PayPal, you start to realize there are other. Let me go back to some other investments that are going on here around the world. When you look, for example, who are the investors in SolarCity, which is one of Elon Musk's babies out there. It's a, if you look at it, a very successful company, the largest installer of solar systems, solar panels, in the basically in the country and probably in the world. But who are the investors? You know, it looks like a laundry list of major investment companies. You know, Merrill Lynch. You have the laundry list of major banks. But Google, which is a CIA-owned operative, basically, that's the Google you go to if you go on the Internet to do a search, that's totally controlled, totally homogenized, and knows you, knows who you are when you're on your computer or if you go to a different computer. Within minutes, they know who you are. They are investing in a solar panel company that's owned by Elon Musk. So the strangeness of this, a company like PayPal, used for internet money transfer, buying Battelle Research Institute. Very strange. Okay, a side note on a product that has been getting some rave reviews, and it's something that came out of necessity. Remember a while back I sold the stainless steel mini 1 liter filter, which was developed for military forces to use out in the field. Highly successful, sold very well over the years. All of a sudden became unavailable. The stainless steel container became unavailable. It was a huge surprise. So anyway, I had to scramble, and I came up with, I looked at all the properties of the old stainless steel mini. And I came up and I said, well, first of all, it doesn't fit everybody. Some people would like a little bit bigger one. Also, it doesn't, the caps did not seal. They just sat on top. They weren't sealing, and it's very hard to make a stainless steel sealing cap. And also, there were no storage containers. So once you filtered the water, you really had no place to put it unless you found your own containers of some kind. So I said, okay, let's invent a new mini travel stainless water filter. And also I could include now the new 5-inch GF filter, which filters out all of the chemicals, the pharmaceuticals, the chloramines, the arsenic, the fluoride, which previously you had to have an add-on filter for just the arsenic and fluoride, did not take out any of the other items. But the... So I could now include my new 5-inch GF filter, which took out all the chemicals, the arsenic and the fluoride, and plus additionally the fluoramine, the chloramines and the plus the heavy metals, aluminum, lead, and on and on, mercury, etc. All of these taken out at the 100% level, all in that one filter. So it was a much better item. So I came up with a design of lightweight, heavy-duty plastic. These are microwavable. They're non-PBS plastic, so they don't have any of the chemicals that leach into the water, the food grade, etc. And so I also included two additional containers as the base, and these have locking caps. People love this. I have been using mine for travel. I went camping a week ago. The place where I was at, the water system was shut down, so everybody was using lake water. And here I am, hundreds of people in the campground, and I'm the only one with a water filter. I used that, we kept it going, and I was using the 2-liter variety, which was much better because on a capacity with a couple friends around, etc., we used more water. And so the 2-liter is a much better size for some people. But if you got a briefcase and you're going on a trip, then the 1-liter makes more sense. So it depends on what you're doing. In fact, I've had people buy both, the 1-liter and the 2-liter. But they're on my webpage. It's a product which is simply a great, great product. It's really world class. And I'm getting reviews now. People have been using them, and they love them. So anyway, remember those are on the web page. They're still included in the 10% sale that is until midnight. But something also that is very essential, I don't care where you go today, if it's in the United States, if it's down the street, if it's at work, the kids at college or whatever, they need a water filter. You just can't drink what's coming out of the tap anymore. Just a quick note, I've seen some notices in the news lately about Hillary Clinton, and of course they're trying to get her up to run for president in the next election. But this is not a political issue, but what I see is funny is that they're using old pictures of her from like 20 years ago. If you see Hillary today, she looks terrible. She's been sidelined, marginalized by being the ambassador to China, and then dealing with, after the Benghazi affair, which was just a total disaster, and then now the other issues she's dealing with in her current position, she just has, you know, aged more than terribly. But what are these people doing at that age still trying to become president? Because for her, that's an achievement. You know, she quit being senator, which she, by the way, won because remember that John Kennedy Jr. was going to run for president or for senator in New York State and would have just beaten her hands down and for sure would have been a president someday. Was not in the old boys club. They killed his dad to get him out of the way, and then here comes John Jr. Remember the little picture of him saluting? And now he's the, you know, most popular guy, well-known guy in New York City. He's about to have a baby. They're all in the airplane, and they all die, including the baby. Now, if you don't think the same people that were behind Diana in England, the murder of John Kennedy Sr., his dad, or Sonny Bono, or Paul Wellstone, or the laundry list of other people, these are the same people. And oddly enough, Ted Kennedy, the mushroom man, the looked like a complete mushroom before he died, horrible condition from drugs and alcohol and anything else that happens to a person's body in Washington, D.C., was essential in destroying the evidence of the airplane of John Jr. and then having them cremated so that there was no evidence. Oh, man. And he was, by the way, Ted Kennedy was the same guy when Paul Wellstone and his family died in the plane crash in Minnesota, Ted Kennedy, of all people, at 5 in the morning or 4 in the morning, whatever it was, at a small airplane airport in Minnesota, shaking the hand of Wellstone and his family as they board the plane, personally making sure that they're all on the plane, and then that plane has a bomb on it that takes it out, or a rocket, who knows how they took that plane down, but it was definitely, it seemed like a bomb in the tail section of the plane as they were coming in for a landing in Bemidji, Minnesota. Ted Kennedy just happened to be there shaking Paul Wellstone's hand that morning. Well, you know, that seems more than a bit odd to me. At any rate, start to link the dots together and you see who's who. But old Hillary does not look too swell, but find it amazing that they're using pictures of her 20 years old in the news press releases of her. This next article is how news insinuation, okay, so remember that I've been covering the Russian holes in the ground in Siberia story for a number of weeks, and I talked about how the issue here was that these were deposits of natural gas, and they would be ignited by lightning, because there were explosions, literal explosions, that blew the top out, and they can see the charred ground laying around all around the outside. It's an explosion of heat, of high temperature. The news media immediately started saying global warming. And they're saying a 5-degree increase in the temperature in Siberia. Really, it's a 0.5-degree increase, not 5 degrees. They're exaggerating, as you would expect in the news. But this is an insinuation. And, of course, in all those initial articles, they said that that was one of the theories being proposed. But the one that they kept pushing was the global climate change story. Cause of those holes in Siberia. And they said, well, they'd kind of poof out, and now let's examine what would happen if pressure built up underground due to warming of the gases. Then it would find a small hole, and it wouldn't blow the whole top off of this thing. It would find a small hole and release the pressure slowly as it built slowly. That's not what you see. You would see that pressure seeping out into the air. But they want to promote this global warming aspect of it. So anyway, that was news insinuation, trying to plant the seed in the mind of the public. Now, this past week, a guy named Alan Weisman comes out, and on CNN, the Candy Nugget News webpage, has an article, a feature article, saying why the Earth is farting. Now, that's the title of the article on CNN. Rather inappropriate article title, but at any rate, now he has written some books. And they are dealing with climate change. It says, Countdown, Our Last Best Hope for a Future on Earth. He's also written a book called The World Without Us. These are New York Times bestseller books written in 34 languages. But to get on the bestseller list in New York Times, not only is it being promoted through that network, but it has to have an agenda that's consistent with the political motifs of the time, based on the World Banker scenario, and that is promoting global climate change. That's how Al Gore got his fame. He's pushing global climate change, and we all know that's a bunch of baloney. But he now takes this idea of global climate change to the Siberian holes in the ground, and he says this is now proven fact, and goes on to take all the logical conclusions of global climate change, and he says now this proves global climate change. So you see the cycle here. First they discover the holes, then they say, well, maybe it's a list, a laundry list of five or six things, and then out of that they promote the global climate change, and then they say that's the cause of the holes, and now they're doing the completing the circle and coming back and saying the holes prove climate change. You see the cyclic argument here? But this is what's being promoted. So you have, first of all, insinuation in the sciences, in the press. Then you have somebody coming along and stating it's fact and totally wiping out any other explanation or scientific analysis. And this guy is no scientist. He's a guy that's promoting and making money, a lot of money, off of promoting global climate change, which is the agenda. So the magic formula, if you want your books to sell, you better say climate change, and then it gets promoted by the New York Times and the boys. So it's not like my books are going to be promoted or put on the New York Times bestseller list. And they even say in the blog notes, somebody has the audacity to say that people who are denying climate change are doing it for money. Whoa, wait a minute, Batman. I didn't know you could get a government grant to say there is no global climate change. You don't get a grant if you say that. So where are the people supposedly making money? It's costing my time, my radio time, which I'm paying for myself, thank you very much, to tell you that this is baloney. So how am I making money off of, you know, or anybody? There's no money in denying global climate change. All the money is for those who promote it. So at any rate, but I'm very happy to see that in the blog, some people take it to task and say what it is, that it's literally garbage. It's simply a religion, and it should be classified as a religion. That was one blog note that I liked, that global climate change should be classified as exactly what it is, a religion. Okay, let's see. There were two discoveries dealing with archaeology this past week. One in which a professor, and I can't remember which university it's at, I'm not going to stop and pull up the email now, I believe it was in Colorado, but he discovered at one of the digs in Montana, which is a popular dinosaur dig, found a dinosaur bone with tissue on it. The chairman of the department came in and screamed. He says, "We're not going to allow your religion to get involved in science." And this is just a comment that I want to make in general, that science today is being promoted and generated and dominated, monopolized by atheists. When I wrote my book, The Diamond Principle, I released it on Coast to Coast AM. They had a guy on there. This was the first time and the last time that'll ever happen. It was a surprise to me. I didn't even know it was going to happen. But it was, what was his name? Bloom. Arthur Bloom? Is that the guy's name? I forget his first name. But promoting the NASA and the concept of the vision of outer space or something, large corporations. And what I was saying is, no, this is all government cover story for the real operation, the Tier 1 space operation, which is being hidden from you. But the other point was that there was no God in science. There was no need for God in science. My book specifically stated that there is definitely, in fact, when you look at everything in nature and the universe and everything else, the design indicates a divine creator, a power of which we really don't understand or know, but obviously as earthlings, as humans, we don't have the capacity to see all of those details. And so all you can do is look around and wonder at this whole universe that we live in and understand that there are powers far above us in organizing powers. That was the entire point of my Diamond Principle book. But science today is being dominated and run by atheists who say that there is no need for God, there is no magic design in the universe that's consistent from one universe, part of the universe, to the other. They can explain it in a Big Bang, and all of the explanations, including archaeology, anthropology, etc., do it as from the point of view of atheists. There is no God, there's no formative design, etc. But when this guy discovered tissue on a dinosaur bone, that would certainly imply that the dinosaurs did not die 65 billion years ago or something like that, whatever they're claiming. Million, 65 million years ago. But that there were some, at least some, in existence much more recently. And so it would seem to make sense that, yeah, some of the dinosaurs could have lived through even up to a few thousand years ago. So what's wrong with that? I mean, the point is that science is not science. Science is being managed as a religion, and the way science works is you make a discovery, you verify it with evidence, and objective interpretation of that evidence is what should rule. But that's not what's going on in the sciences. When I was at Cornell, when I knew I was being thrown out of there for my beliefs because I was extremely vocal about my work, about the fact that comets were not dirty snowballs, about the fact that the planets formed one at a time, that comets were the formative pieces of planetary, the planets and the moons of the solar system, and many of the small comets never would become a planet. That's something that I've been misquoted on. Not all comets become planets. No, of course not. A lot of them pass through the solar system and never stop. A lot of them never grow because they don't have enough initial gravitational pull to hold the materials that are held in. But at any rate, the point is I walked into the geology department of Cornell, and I had a meeting with one of the professors there. I walked up to the secretary and I said, I have a meeting with so-and-so. And the head of the geology department, everybody knew me there, looked at me out of his office and he screamed out, anybody that talks about electric comets in this department will never receive tenure. It was something like that. And so that was the end of that. I had to leave. He wouldn't allow me to talk to the guy. And I could go on and on about my encounters at Cornell with the professors there. A second story, there's a cave in Wyoming that's been under investigation for a number of years, in which animals that supposedly lived between 25,000 and 100,000 years ago all died in the same cave. Now remember that there is a real disparity in the announcing and the interpretation of data regarding the last major extinction. Velikovsky said that this happened at one time based on the great devastation caused by the comet Venus. And all of these animals died in a cave. So what they said is these animals fell into the cave or went into the cave individually over a period of time, over all those hundreds of thousands of years, and individually died. And, of course, that's the interpretation of a uniformitarian interpretation. It's like the tar pits in California, in L.A., La Brea tar pits. The idea is that the animals walked in there one by one into a tar pit and died. And it's like, how stupid. And then there's even a woman in there. You think that the woman walked into this tar pit and just kept walking until she drowned? I mean, come on, boys and girls. Really stupid. But at any rate, that's what they expect you. That's the official story. I've been to the La Brea tar pits and examined them. And it's almost hilarious. But the people look around and, you know, what happened is the tar and the oil came in with the comet. As the comet came by, we were inundated with water. One was water, but also the hydrocarbons in the vast comet tail of Venus and that the tar, the long chain hydrocarbons turned into tar and washed these animals into a pit where they died. That's what happened. But if you believe the story that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these animals, each individually, were so stupid that they walked into these tar pits and died, well, you know, you got to be brain dead. That's the official explanation. Okay, but anyway, the cave in Wyoming, they're giving you the same interpretation. Okay, I got to move. This show is racing by. This I want to talk about, the comet Sliding Spring approaching Mars. NASA this week comes out and says it's going to cause auroras. Gee, NASA, wouldn't be copying McCanny's work again, would you? Now, how is, according to their scheme, the debris in the tail of the comet, which would be fine microparticles of some kind, would come racing into the atmosphere or maybe interact with these little magnetic bulbs that are around Mars and cause auroras. And now, wait a minute. We've all seen meteors come into the atmosphere. They come streaking across the sky in the Earth, which has a much, much denser atmosphere. Have they ever caused auroras? No. There's no report of that. There's no inkling of it in any scientific papers. Nobody has ever, ever in the world, in fact, they expressly said, NASA and the astronomy community rest their laurels on the fact that when Halley's Comet came in 1911 or 1910, then it caused absolutely no effect of any kind. Now, that is the official story. So all of a sudden, 2014, Comet Sliding Spring coming near Mars is going to cause auroras, according to NASA. Gee, like I say, wouldn't be trying to copy McCanny's prediction at all, would you? Or head him off at the pass. The prediction that I made, and you all heard it on this radio show a number of years ago, or a number of months ago, or weeks ago, when I first started talking about this, was one of the things I said that would cause electrical effects, including auroras, as the comet interacted electrically with Mars. Believe me, a dirty snowball comet with little fuzzy piece of cloud of water around it would not cause auroras. There's no reason for that, but NASA has to cover their behind because obviously they can't let me have any notoriety. Okay, a quick topic here. Safe room in your house. Designate in your house, and I'm telling everybody, a safe room where you have a wood stove. And this is a room. It might be in the basement. It might be somewhere where you can close it off. It's a small room, well insulated, where you have a wood stove and, of course, the chimney going outside. The reason for having a small room that's enclosed and insulated, because in a severe winter, if you have to survive, then you're not burning up a lot of firewood. It takes a very small fire to heat a small room. And so then you would need wood that's split into very small pieces, a hatchet or axe, available wood source outside, the south-facing windows, if possible, where you could open that up in the daytime and get sunlight in. And also at night, then, you'd need something to plug those windows up and create a vapor barrier, like the 3M plastic that goes on windows, or just any kind of plastic that would with duct tape, and then stuff blankets or cardboard or something in that window well, and then seal it so that the cold windows are one of the biggest losses of energy in a house. So at night, you would, when the sun is not providing positive heat energy coming in, then you'd want to close it. You're going to need a water filter. And remember, your water filter will not function if it's frozen. So it's a container. It'll break like any other container. But you're going to need water, available water. Have a big pan available so you can melt snow, because it takes a tremendous amount of snow to make water. Freeze-dried food. Canned food and other types of preserved food in bags like the camp food, etc., will go bad if it freezes because it has too high a water content. Canned food will not survive being frozen. Freeze-dried food is the way. I used to sell freeze-dried food. I don't anymore because there's many good sources for that. You have to have a bucket and a toilet, and the best toilet to have is a dry toilet. Have mulch, leaf mulch, etc., and use that, and then have a place outside where you can dump it in a place out behind a tree someplace, and fill the bucket about 2-3 inches with leaf mulch or whatever, and then when you get done going to the bathroom, cover it with more, and then every day or so take it out and dump it. This is assuming we don't have any infrastructure. And you got to take care of yourself. And another thing about being in an emergency situation, protect yourself. You have to be able to protect yourself and your goods. And don't go out. Don't go to, across town to get Aunt Grandma or whatever. Have everything planned so you're in one spot and you have the essentials, the food, that stored water, etc., that you need for your group. And you have to take care of yourself. This is in case of severe emergency. So define a safe room in your house. One room, it should be small, it should be comfortable, where you can sleep, eat, everything you do is in that little room, and it's all sealed off and insulated with some kind of a heater, not electric. It could be a gas heater, but it has to be vented to the outside. And if it's a wood stove or a gas stove, it's also better if it takes its air, its intake air, from the outside. So all you're doing is producing heat. You're not using the oxygen that's in your room. And don't use space heaters like kerosene because they will use up all the oxygen and you will die. You know, so that's why I'm saying you have to have this well planned out. But define a safe room in your house, a room. It's also best to be on the lower level because it takes less to heat it. That's all I can tell you. And sometimes it's a good idea to actually pitch a tent in an area. If you have a family room in the basement, pitch a tent in there, and that will help preserve your heat to the cold nights. We might be heading into a severe cold winter this year, and all indications are that we're going to. You have to be prepared. A listener asked me in an email, he said a number of years ago I gave a show about the comet coming by Earth historically, and I was giving a whole range of examples. It looked like the August show of 2012 is what he was saying. And I gave examples of how a Earth-like object coming by Earth at one lunar distance, what it would do to Earth, and then I'd increase the size of the object, I increased the distance, and I went through a whole scenario of alterations of the parameters. But the question was, what would it take to gravitationally remove the atmosphere and Earth, the atmosphere and oceans from Earth? And of course, that would be an extinction level event. Very little would survive, possibly microbial life, etc. And Earth has seen those kinds of disasters in its past. Well, here's the situation. I wanted to clarify this. You have two effects. You have the electrical connection between the object and Earth, which basically when they saw Venus, the comet, come by Mars, they saw a snake-like extension, like extend your arm out. This is what they saw. And Mars, take your hand and kind of wrap your thumb around one side of Mars and your fingers around the other, and it looks like a snake. It looks like Mars is in the clutches of a snake. And that's what the electrical discharge to Mars would have looked like between the comet Venus. At that point, the gravitational field of whichever would be larger, in that case Venus was larger than Mars, would literally suck all of the atmosphere and ocean off the other object. When Venus came by Earth, Earth was larger, so Earth won the tug of war, even though the planet Venus the forming planet Venus, the comet was probably 10, 20 lunar distances away, possibly. And so it's not strictly the gravity. It's the fact that, and this is something, too, that you might notice with sliding spring coming by Mars, that that comet is highly charged. It could drag a lot of atmosphere, and it become very excited as it comes by Mars. It could grow, and we could see a good portion of the atmosphere of Mars leached off onto that comet because of the electric field of the comet, if it ionizes. And so that's very hard to imagine what's going to happen. The other thing is a good portion of the tail of the comet could be dragged into the atmosphere of Mars and pollute it. So we could see a pollution event of the atmosphere of Mars when this comet comes by. At any rate, okay, on to the next couple topics. I'm running out of time here. There's only a few minutes left. There was, as I said, so many topics to cover on tonight's show. I want to continue talking about distributed energy. There's a lot of good work going on in this area, but there's little knowledge amongst the public, and unfortunately the cost of installing alternative energy on a regional, on a local basis at your business or home is not reasonable. The price of solar panels should be down around, a dollar a watt, let's put it that way. It's up around probably $4 to $5 a watt for solar panels, just for the solar panels. That doesn't include the inverter and all the other equipment and cables, etc., that you need to hook it up. So these prices have to come down, and that could easily happen, because really all it is, a solar panel is a plate of glass, very special glass, but there are some innovations that could be around the corner in the world of light, of the light and the conversion of light to electrical energy, but more on that in a future program. And I'm sorry I didn't have more time to talk about energy tonight, distributed energy, but keep tuned. As I say, these releases will be coming out very shortly on the wind and solar, the improvements to solar energy. And I would encourage people, if you can, to become your own source of electricity, because the that's something I have personally done. I have personally put a zero footprint on my life as far as energy consumption. I give back 100% of what I take from the environment, and live within your means. It's the old expression, you take what you need and you leave the rest. I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. Remember the webpage, jmccsci.com. That's jmcc, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. And remember, the 10% sale still on will end tonight at midnight. Good night.